Dominic Cappadee is delivered by TriStar Moving, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to Superbook Sports, live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios, Radio Row at Super Bowl 57. Our coverage is presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue in the Richland Creek Shopping Center. Pay no money down and no interest for 1 year right now during their tax refund sale. Hal Gill, who normally joins us at 5:30, had to move some things around. Hal Gill joins us now on the program, Preds radio analyst. Hal, I'm mad, but I'm not as mad about the performance the other night, which was terrible. I think we can all agree, and even they would say so. But I think I'm more mad with the direction of the team. David Poyle did an interview with the Tennessean, and there were like seven different talking points, and they all drove me insane. Right now, the state of the team, where they're at. But let's start with the game the other night, and let's start right there with what you make of the fact that, well, they got their butts kicked.
Yeah, that happens sometimes, Jared. You know, you think the hard part is they were buzzing before that break, and they had three wins, and they were doing some good things and building on something, and then you know, they had that break, and, you know, you can make excuses. They're rusty. They had bad breaks, a couple bad bounces, you know, that started out that game, and then it snowballed them. The frustrating part is that they weren't able to turn the momentum back around. I think that what has made them successful before the break was that they were able to recognize things weren't going right and lock it down and turn it around, and whatever momentum changer, whether it's a big play, a fight, a big penalty kill, a power play goal, whatever turned the momentum around. They weren't able to get that going. So that was the frustrating part about that game. But, you know, I look at it as, okay, that's a blip. They go back, have a couple hard practices, and then go off to Philly and try to get a win there and figure it out and start to build on it. But, Jared, just because they lose one game, I don't think you can – panic button. I think that's been the case with too many people following the Preds is they've been playing pretty good hockey, and they lose some games along the way, but it's tough to win every game. It's a tough league, and you look at what Vegas has done. Was leaking oil. They were playing some bad hockey, and they got healthy and after the break, and they came out and they played a pretty good game for 60 minutes. So, there's a lot to be upset about that one game, but I think if you look at what the Preds were, they were building on something good. Now they just have to find that what they were building on before the break.
Yeah, I actually not too worked up about the one loss. I mean, to me, I say that it kind of cancels out that whole, you know, we had a meeting and we're focused and we're ready to go from the end of the break to this. It's like, you know, that was good, but this was bad. That doesn't bother me. What bothers me is I think a lot of us, and I know we've argued about this and whatnot, the direction of the team is kind of tough, right? Because the team keeps saying, we think we can, we think we can, we think we can. David Poyle is saying, I don't know, we'll see. And the fans, I think, are saying, we know you can't because you've gotten bounced in the first round all these years in a row. And I think it's the frustrating part. Maybe, honestly, how a little bit, like, I think I'm like, that this team is going to do something to even lock itself in more, chasing after just making the playoffs this year when it doesn't feel like they have good enough talent to compete consistently in this league and would not be able to compete in the playoffs.
I understand what you're saying, Jared, but I respectfully disagree. I think, first of all, the player's mindset is we can do this, you know. If you're in that locker room and you're not, if you're looking at going, hey, we're never going to make anything, you're in the wrong game. These guys take a lot of pride in what they do, and they believe that they're going to turn. Like, you know, you look at Matt Duchene, he believes he's going to score 40. He believes he's going to go on a hot streak and start to put it in. Forsberg thinks the same thing. These guys didn't get to where they are by having that mindset where, hey, it's not going to work out. The brass, their job, you know, David Poyle and they're looking at it going, all right, what should we build on this team? What do we need to add to this team? Do we need to get younger? Do we need to prepare for the next year? That's their job. The scouts are out there trying to next player that's going to jump off the screen, and who do we trade for, and who can we get in at a bargain? You're looking for draft picks that maybe you can squeeze in, that, you know, that everyone's looking to build in different directions, and the fans are going to criticize and say, and make their opinions. That's what everyone does. But I think, personally, watching the team, 4 points out of a playoff spot, and, there's a lot of hockey left to be played, and I look at it as they can make a splash. If you get guys start scoring goals, and you get guys that – and the West is wide open. You look at the East is tough. You got Boston and Carolina. I think those two teams are going to be tough. But the West, I don't know if there's a team that – I think the Preds can compete with any of these teams in the West. So I don't think that it's just about squeaking in the playoffs. I think it's about preparing to make a run in the playoffs, do everything you can to ensure that you get there, and then see what happens. I don't think this team is a team that's going to get snuffed out in the playoffs. I think you have McDonough, who's been there plenty of times, and you added him, and Niederreiter the same way. I think they're playoff players, and I think you add those guys into the lineup, and they can do some damage. So, we've talked about this repeatedly. I think they're a team that can compete in the playoffs, so it's going to be a challenge to get there. There's some good teams that they have to pass, but I don't think it's too far off.
So Hal Gill's with us. One thing that drove me crazy, Hal, was David Poile in his sit down with the Tennessean said that the reason why Philip Tomasino is still in the minors is because he had a bad training camp and that Nino Niederreiter, and there wasn't a spot for him in the top six. And that drives me crazy because there was a spot for him in the top six. They gave it to Kiefer Sherwood, and obviously he got sent down. And, I mean, again, bad training camp, so what? Training camp's what, 2 weeks? So he had a bad 2 weeks, and this team won't call him up. And I am convinced that if they will not call him up, it's because they don't think he's ready. And I just don't like we feel like there's some reason that they will not call up Tomasino, and it is nothing that they're saying because what they're saying doesn't necessarily make sense.
Yeah, it's tough. I think you bring up Phil Tomasino and you say you gave him 10 minutes. I don't think he gets to be a better player that way. I think he's the kind of kid that needs to play in all situations and get some confidence, because from what I saw last year is his confidence got rattled when it became, what do you call it? Big boy hockey. He wasn't mm-hmm. ready for the big boy hockey. And I think that takes time to build, and it takes confidence, and it takes confidence not just when things are going well, but when things are going bad, can you power through that? And I think, everyone's got their certain time. I think they're afraid to rush that. They know they have a good asset, and they want to protect it and let it develop. And, is there going to be a time when they say, hey, let's pull the trigger? I hope so soon, because I feel like he's doing some good things, and all reports show that he's getting to where he needs to be.
So why not call him up?
They
got
15
shots on net the other night. Call him up now. They got 15 shots on net the other night. Call him up.
Yeah, well, they didn't get 15 until later. I mean, that was they got to find a way to get fucked
to the
net for sure. I think you're asking a lot for Phil Tomasino to come in to a team and tell him, okay, we'll jump on your shoulders, big boy. Go ahead, take us there. I think that's too much to ask at this point right now. So my point being, you want to bring him up and integrate him into the lineup. I just don't think he's quite ready to bear the 15 to 18 minutes and play against the big boys, until he kind of shows that he does that consistently in Milwaukee.
Hal, I flew off the handle when David Poile said in the Tennessee and bragged about the fact that the team may have 5 first-round picks in Milwaukee next season. I don't buy tickets to see the Milwaukee Predators. I buy tickets to see the Nashville Predators. I want to see those first-round picks in Nashville. And it makes me think that if you're going to brag about what you have at Milwaukee, then why would you not think that it's time to rebuild what you have at the NHL level, Hal?
I don't think this team is ready for a total rebuild. I think they're the retooling and stocking the shelves. I think they have some good young talent, and I think you want to build that, but it goes back to development. I think you have to play guys when they're ready. You look at Yusso Parsonen and what he's done. I think he's a guy that is a rare case where he can come in and play a good role on a team as a young guy. I think it takes a long time for these guys to develop, and you want to do it the right way. So, it's tough because if you have a young talent, you want to see him come up and play, and it's a young man's league, but at the same time, you want to develop them the right way. And I think the team that we have right here, I need bigger performances from big-time players. And I think if you're looking at that, that would be the problem with the team. And it's easily fixed if these guys start performing on a consistent basis. And they've done that leading up into the break. Now we've got to see if they can do it and be the ones that get them over the top. You know, I'm talking Johansson, Granlund, Forsberg, Duchesne. Like, can these guys get them over the top? Can they up their game? You're talking about, young guys coming in, Tomasino and draft picks and younger players. They're not going to get them over the top right now. I think you need to look at the bigger guys.
I mean, to hell, we've got 5 years of knowing that these guys can't get them over the top.
Well, I think last year they had pretty good years.
They got swept in the playoffs.
I don't know if they lost any of the games last year. And yeah, they ran into a buzzsaw in the Colorado Avalanche. They were pretty good. So, I think they had good seasons, and they need more of that this year.
Hal Gill, as always, joining us on the program. Not as much yelling as I expected, Hal. Next week, if things don't improve, I promise some yelling. But, I always love those sessions. Good stuff, Hal. Appreciate you, bud.
You know what, Jared? If you yell at a wall, all it does is bounce back to you. Sometimes you just got to be quiet and just let it happen.
By the way, Mike Felger wanted me to tell you hello
here at the Super Bowl. Good old Felger.
And I told him, I said, I'm talking to Hal Gill. And he said, tell him I said hello. I said, he doesn't like you. He said, I know.
Oh, I like him. I just don't like his opinions.
There you go. Hal Gill, always.
You're wrong.
Hal Gill joining us as always. Hal, appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Cheers, guys.
Yep, Hal Gill joining us on the program. I mean, the idea of, they need to see if Johansson and Duchesne and Granlund and Forsberg and Yossi can carry them. We need to see. Do we? Do we need to see that? Do we not know that? I mean, it's kind of like Tannehill, right? We know Ryan Tannehill is not going to go out there and outshoot Patrick Mahomes or Joe Burrow in a playoff game. We have enough evidence. We have enough data. We know. I'm just saying. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to weigh in. 615-737-1025. We are live out here at Radio Row at the Super Bowl here on Stillman and Company. And coming up next, one thing that I feel that we've got to get to, and we will do that. Stillman and Company, live from Radio Row at the Super Bowl, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Is it frustrating when a team comes out of a break like that and plays that way? I mean, we made a lot of the meeting after the St. Louis game and all that stuff, and the players that talked about that, maybe what a turning point it could be. I guess, how surprised were you that the game went the way that it did the other night against Vegas?
I think because I felt that, as a coach, when you go into the, you go into the game, we felt the whole team, it should have been a pretty good setup for us. We had a break, we had 2 days coming into practice. Guys weren't coming in hot from vacation and things like that, where if it's a shorter break, it goes in. And, but most importantly, where we're at in the season, that, the stakes are high for us right now. And we got to make sure that, you're not going to win every game down the stretch, but there's got to be consistency in our focus, consistency in our effort, consistency in playing the game the right way.
There you go. That was John Hines, Predators coach, talking about got to be consistency. I mean, I hate to say this, but this time 3 years ago, Hines had been the coach for about a month. And I asked him, I said, what's this team need? He said, consistency. They haven't been consistent since he took the job. You know, they were terrible at the beginning of the 21 season. They were great at the end of it. They got beat in the first round. They were great at the beginning of last year. And then they were terrible at the end. And they got beat in the first round. And right now, I am convinced they're going to the playoffs. Like, I want everybody out there to know. They got a 24% chance to make the playoffs. I am convinced. This is why I think it's going to happen. They're going to get hot in the second half of the year. They're not going to make any moves at the trade deadline. They're not going to sell anybody. They're not going to trade for anybody. They're not going to do anything. And then they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to be C, 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 and then they'll lose in five games. And David Poyle will keep his job, and John Hines will keep his job next year, and it'll be the same thing every single year until the cycle stops. That's what I think is going to happen. Let's go to your phones, as promised. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Ricky is up next here on Trade Rumors. Thank you for calling. Thank you for waiting. What's up, Ricky?
Hey, Jared. How are you? Thanksgiving week, I called you up and I mentioned something about the New York Rangers and Tanner Janot. I told you that Kratzoff from the New York Rangers, former eighth overall top pick, he's been in the Ranger doghouse for 2 years because he refused an assignment for the minors and went back to Russia. And I brought it up to you, and they make the exact same money. They're on the exact same contract. The difference is Janot's upside is 15 to 18 goals, where this kid is 35 to 45 goals. So now there's a buzz in the New York media. It's been picked up by three of the major papers in New York that the Rangers are negotiating for a deal. Kratzoff and a draft pick for Janot. I was just wondering if you heard anything about Janot possibly going. Where do they stand on re-signing him? And do you think if you add a guy for, I mean, it's common sense. If you can add a potential 40-goal scorer for a potential 20-goal scorer, you have to make that move. And these are the moves that I don't think Poyle is making to improve this team.
So I will answer this just by saying, and I appreciate your call. I have no idea about any trade rumors with Tanner Janot. I don't care about Tanner Janot. Like, I know that last year he had a season. Oh, Jared, yo, yeah, you can think about it now. He's got 13 points, I think, this season. I mean, I don't want to say he sucks because he doesn't suck, but he's average. He's an average guy. You know, he's a tough player. He hits people. He checks them. He's Austin Watson. Just like I said, you could go get that from Milwaukee whenever you want it. And they could. You know, that's what he is. If somebody wants to trade for Tanner Janot, please take him. I couldn't, you know, whatever. I don't think you win because of Tanner Janot. I don't think you lose because of Tanner Janot, no matter what they think. You know, they just signed Cole Smith to an extension. I kind of think it's probably the same old, same old. Who cares? And that's the thing about a lot of what the Predators' biggest problem is they approach trade deadline. I texted Bobby Stanley over the weekend. I said, can they do anything? Like, can the Predators trade anybody? I mean, think about it. How many people out there want these players? Nobody wants Johansson. Nobody wants Duchesne. Nobody's going to want Granlund because he's making too much money. I mean, and not only that, the way the league is, because the salary cap doesn't go up and all these teams that think they're good enough to win have been spending money, and this is a real salary cap. All the good teams don't have any money. The only teams that have cap space are the bad teams. And so they'll be willing to take on bad contracts, but you have to give good picks in exchange for those bad contracts. Then they'll take them, and that'll create cap space. But you have to have players that people want. And there's just nobody on this team that anybody wants. I mean, Saros, yes. People would want Saros. You can't trade Forsberg. You can't trade Yossi because they have no movement clauses. You can't trade. You cannot trade Johansson or Duchesne. Nobody wants them. You probably can't trade Granlund. So what do you have to trade? I mean, Ekholm. But again, it's a $4 million, or he's not a $4 million defenseman. I forget how much he makes. You know, he's like, what, a $6, $8 million defenseman? I don't know exactly. But, like, he signed for all those years. Maybe somebody will take him. But there's just not a lot to trade. So when it comes to the Janots of the world, all those guys, they're Scarbinis. I can go get another one. I can go get another Tanner Janot. I can go get another Cole Smith. I can go get another Tommy Novak, who they signed yesterday. I can get another one of all of these guys. Every single one of them I can get another one of. And they probably have them right now in Milwaukee. I'm sure they have another Austin Watson somewhere. I don't think that that is what they have to, you know, that they have to go out there and, you know, what do I think about the Predators trying to re-sign Tanner Jeannot? I don't care because I just don't think he's really any good. I think he's just an average player. Texter says, every other team in the NHL finds NHL talent in the draft. The Predators trot out AHL guys in Nashville every night. Poyle is obsessed with developing talent and restocking the Admirals. The best offensive player the Predators have ever drafted was Victor Arvidsson, and he's gone. That's not true. The best offensive player the Predators have ever drafted is Fiala, and he's gone too. The Titans find an offensive phenom in the first year and in the first round, and 3 years later they waive him. This is 25 years going here. You know, the Adam Vingan poll had David Poyle's approval rating somewhere around like 13% or something ridiculous like that. I would love to see what that poll result would be now, because I don't really hear anybody that defends. Then again, maybe it's, you know, a vocal majority, but a silent minority who thinks, no, he's doing a good job. But the 5 first round picks in Milwaukee, woo! Next year, people, Milwaukee will have 5 first round picks playing for them. And I'm supposed to be excited by that. That's kind of tough for me. We have a Super Bowl legend who is set to join us live from Radio Row at Super Bowl 57. We will do that next right here. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Bowl 57, thanks to our friends at Social Furniture. But the first Super Bowl ever played in this stadium here in Glendale, the undefeated Patriots against the Giants, one of the biggest upsets maybe in the history of the NFL. And it's all because David Tyree caught a ball on his helmet, the hero of Super Bowl 42. David, good to be back in Arizona, I have to assume.
Oh, well, listen, second home. I feel real comfortable here. Miracles happen in the desert. I think the other Super Bowl previously might have been Malcolm Butler, so good things happen here, man. I had to get back on stage.
That is true. I haven't really thought about that. So Mike Vrabel played on that Patriots team,
yep,
coaching the Titans now. When you go back to that game and the week that led up to it, one thing I always think about is the fact that you guys played the Patriots at the end of the season,
yep,
before you played them in the Super Bowl. Everybody was saying, this Patriots team is unstoppable, they're unbeatable, yep, but you guys had already played them. How important was that?
Yeah, I think it was fantastic. I mean, at the end of the day, you want to beat the best if you're going to be the best. We got a chance to do that final game of the season, and they were really good. Like, that's one thing I'd say. Obviously, we beat them in the Super Bowl, but they were really good. It was a shootout at Giant Stadium for the last game of the season. They won. And, you know, but we felt confident that we had the dogs to go get them. And although it was a different game and the Super Bowl was more of a defensive game, you know, we proved victors. And I think it was just the resolve and the grit of that team and the leadership that things came together for us.
What was it like with Eli? Because I think Eli's going to make the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, definitely.
Eli was regular season a 500 quarterback.
Yeah.
And I felt like being in New York, Eli took a lot of crap on a consistent basis.
Sure.
Never fazed him. But – Eli, at the same time, had those two miracle runs, and you were a part of it, you know, playing your way from the bottom of the NFC, you know, to the championship. What was it about Eli that made him such a good postseason quarterback that I think is going to get him in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I think, you know, so just for clarity, I think he's definitely a Hall of Famer. The only thing that you're wondering is when, and mm-hmm. I think that's probably the only argument that you could have. But it was really his steely-eyed focus, his commitment to being the best. And he was the same all the time, man. Like, you know how hard that is with all the deflections, all the shade, the demands, his name. So he, like I said, they chose this, but he was probably the perfect character for this. And I think when you put the right pieces in place around somebody like Eli Manning, that's when the magic happens. And, yeah, he's definitely a different guy if we can get to the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, like, he you know, just kudos to him, his whole career. And it was great to have, you know, be tied to him by not just a miracle. We're actually tied to each other by birthday. So that's my dog.
David Tyree is with us, the hero of Super Bowl 42. So when you go back to kind of that game itself, mm-hmm. and that play, take us through that, knowing the stage. Like, take us through what it was like, knowing you were going to play in this game, and then actually having to make the play itself. And maybe how did those feel and were they different?
Yeah, honestly, you know, like, the cool part about me being a special teams player is there's so many ways in my brain where I feel like I could impact the game meaningfully. So I was going in with a great expectation to do something significant. Now, you know, the most forgotten touchdown in Super Bowl history was actually in the game plan. I was scripted. I do a lot of get in there, do some dirty work, hit the safety. So when that happens, I'm good. I'm golden. I'm like, we just went ahead. So I think when it comes to the helmet catch, it's really just at the end of the day, is the play was lined up well. We had the coverage that we were looking for. Could have possibly threw the post over the top, but it didn't matter because, you know, thank God the offensive linemen, they olayed everybody, and we started playing backyard football. Instincts took over. Eli becomes Vanilla Vic. I'm the black guy who can't drum, and we got a miracle.
When you look, David Tyree's with us, when you look at receivers today,
yeah,
the Titans traded away A.J. Brown, and now A.J. Brown's here.
Yep.
And I asked A.J. Brown the other day, I said, how does it feel? Because, you know, there was contract drama between A.J. and the Titans. I said, how does it feel that you're in the Super Bowl and the Titans didn't make the playoffs? He laughed and said no comment. And then he said to me that he expected that question out of me.
Yeah.
I do wonder this. How big of a mistake was trading A.J. Brown?
I think it was a mistake. I'll say I don't know how big of a mistake it was. You know, like, I don't know the true state of affairs and what was to be gained outside of some positioning. What we do know is that, you know, the quarterback position, Ryan Tannehill needs an A.J. Brown. Like, there's different levels to the quarterback position, and when Ryan's playing his best football, he needs playmakers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the you know, for lack of better terms, the asinine side of the decision where you need a high-end playmaker, and that was your guy, and you just shipped him off. So, from my vantage point, it looked like a crazy decision. I don't know what they were looking to build and gain moving forward.
So the Titans drafted Treylon Burks in the first round. Mm-mm. David Tyree's with us. Treylon Burks, you know, comes in a little bit out of shape.
Yep.
He's dealing with asthma. And, you know, you've played different places. And in the South, it can be really bad as asthma is concerned. So he's dealing with asthma. He's dealing with injuries. When he was on the field, he was a really good player. But he was on the field, off the field. How important is the offseason between year one and year two for a young receiver in the league?
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. That's when you make physical and mental leaps. Now, you don't know what to expect, and everybody's a little bit different in their mental capacity. The NFL is a mental game, so it's the mental giants who win. And the physical ones, they have a little bit of time to figure out how they're going to improve mentally. Hopefully that's what a Treylon Burks can do. He can grind that out in the offseason. Be much better prepared to understand what the demands are of the franchise, the playbook, and how to mentally improve so that he could play faster. Getting in shape is our job, and that shouldn't be difficult, although now he knows what to expect.
What was different for you from your rookie year to your second year?
You know, honestly, I was literally a different dude. I got arrested on marijuana possession after my rookie year. I was a wild dude.
And that was back in the day when, like, weed, it was, like, bad guy.
You're a horrible person.
Like, bad guy. Yeah, I remember, like, when I was in high school in Honey Badger, maybe I was in college, smoked all that weed at LSU, and it was, like, bad
human
guy.
And I'm still of the understanding where, obviously, the narrative around marijuana has changed, but I'm not going to sit up here
and say legal here.
This is – Hey, listen, it's not necessarily good for you. It just has some benefits. Like, there's still idiots out here making really poor decisions because they're using drugs, right? So I'm kind of like the balanced view of it. We understand that the cannabinoid has some, you know, it has some benefits. But let's not go crazy just because we know it has some benefits. I think alcohol, wine has benefits, but if you drink too much, you'll be in bad shape.
Mm-hmm. So the difference between year one and year two?
Yeah, it was good. I was a new person, and I was able to be a stable force. Not just as a special teams player, but more so as a person. You know, like, my life changed around. I didn't have a faith. I didn't have a stabilizing force from a value system. I was just a wild, reckless young man. So year two, football side was pretty easy for me. Even year one, it just cemented that.
David Tyree, how much do you remember of the Super Bowl 42 here in Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have some keen, precious memories on the field. Off the field, the celebration, Wild Horse Resort, the place goes from the hotel to an absolute, party scene. So it's just special to get back into the environment. Obviously, it's Super Bowl week. NFL community is a little smaller than you might think. So just see so many different faces and even people from all different components and the media partners as well. So it's just good to be here talking about what we're doing and, you know, just enjoying the ride.
Okay. DavidTyree85.com. You've also launched a new podcast called Catch the Moment with David Tyree, which is available wherever anybody gets the podcast. Yep. And you've got your you've got the mission in life to give back to help mentor and coach young men by creating the David Tyree Catch Camp.
Yep.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was exciting. We actually just executed our first one here in Glendale. And our goal is to feed the dream and paint the reality. We give them foundational football in the morning. And my career as a special teams player is what paved the way for the catch. In the afternoon, we do leadership development and careers in sports. Catch actually serves as an acronym for commitment, attitude, tenacity, creativity, and hard work. So it's really just about merging, giving them the entire life cycle for the next gen athlete so that they can attain their moment, not just on the field, but off the field.
David, appreciate it. Thanks for stopping by.
Appreciate it.
You got great memories here in Arizona. And enjoy the week.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yep, David Tyree with us, Stillman & Company, live from Radio Row, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. What is it about Vrabel that you see that makes him a tremendous coach?
Because he sees the game from 35,000 feet. He coaches all three things. You know, during the Vietnam War, there was a plane that the government developed that was called the F-105. And that plane could fly fast. It could carry heavy bombs. And it had great range. Mm-hmm. The problem was why the Air Force called it the Thud is because it couldn't do all three things at the same time. Okay. So to be a great head coach, you've got to run your offense, run your defense, run your special teams all at the same time and understand and intertwine all those three things. And I think Vrabel can do that. I mean, I think, and I sent him this in a text, I think the game against Kansas City should go to the Hall of Fame. Malik Willis gets one first down with after 6 minutes gone in the second quarter for the remainder of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that game goes to overtime. The Chiefs have 19 third downs. They gained almost 500 yards. They couldn't run the ball. They were 2-for-4 in the red zone. But they got that game to overtime. That's a remarkable coaching job in a three-level level.
That was Mike Lombardi, former NFL general manager, joining us on the program, talking about Mike Vrabel. Your phones are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Matt texts into the text line and says, with an offensive coordinator, a quarterback passing game coordinator, and a passing game analyst, who gets the blame if things are bad? Tannehill, one of the guys, or the guys who decided that having a passing game analyst was a good idea, or the general manager who sticks with Tannehill? I mean, ultimately, I think that if Tannehill comes back next season, that Ryan Tannehill is probably playing for his career. And so if things don't go well, Tannehill will be blamed. And then the Titans after that will move on to another quarterback. And then maybe that's probably where Vrabel comes under the microscope. Because the way the cycle works is it is GM goes first. Coach, I shouldn't say goes first. It's GM, coach, and quarterback. And in some level, when you are good, we'll use the Eagles, right? Sirianni, I think it was Julian Love of the Giants came out and said that Sirianni's kind of a bozo, but he's got a great team, and so he's got a free ride as coach. And the Eagles got mad that they said that about the coach, but it's not something that I hadn't thought about. Not going to say that I for sure believe it, but it's certainly not something that I haven't thought about. And so all three, oh, Jalen Hurts, they're going to give him $50 million a season off of what he's having. And Sirianni, what a great coach, right? Well, I think the reason why the Eagles are really good is because their offensive line is incredible with a bunch of quality veterans and some good young players like a Landon Dickerson, like a Jordan Mailata that they have on that line. They've got two great receivers. Howie Roseman made the trade for A.J. Brown. We know how bad that trade was for the Titans, but we also know on the other side of it how good that trade was for the Eagles. They've got a great tight end in Dallas Goedert. I was talking to somebody today about Tannehill, and I don't mean this as a knock on Jalen Hurts, but I believe that if Ryan Tannehill was the quarterback of the Eagles, I think there's a good chance the Eagles would be right here right now because the Eagles are that good. Great defensive line. Howie Roseman, the general manager, and I know he's pissed them off plenty down there, but Howie Roseman is the reason why the Eagles are there. But Doug Peterson was the coach the last time they won the Super Bowl. Sirianni wasn't. Nick Foles and Carson Wentz quarterback that team. Jalen Hurts didn't. That team had a great offensive line. That team had a great defensive line, just like this one. That's why they win. But all three get the credit. And that's kind of the point I'm making, is that in the NFL, the way that it works is it's GM gets blamed first, or coach gets the blame first, or quarterback gets the blame first. Then after that guy gets fired, then the blame shifts. The 2016 Titans are a good example of that. Mike Mularkey's the coach, Mariota's the quarterback, John Robinson's the GM. The first guy who gets the blame, Mularkey, fired. The next guy who gets the blame, Mariota, fired. The third guy who got the blame, years later, Robinson, fired. And so now I think the blame shifts. You know, the microscope's probably going to be on Tannehill, because so many people think so much of Mike Vrabel. Vrabel's a great coach, I agree. But, you know, he certainly has his faults. So to answer your question about the pass game analysts, the pass game coordinator, the offensive coordinator, the quarterback's coach, the, you know, the ashtray cleaner outer, all of that that they have, I do think that the onus is going to be on Tannehill. And not only that, I do think it is fair to say Tannehill entered this past season in kind of the same spot, and Tannehill actually had a pretty good year. So I'm not going to hold that one against him. But that is how the blame works when you ask who's going to get the blame. Pac-Man Jones was on our program earlier today. This is not a shameless plug. This is a legitimate, you need to go listen to the podcast, 4:30 today. Wherever you get your podcast, just search Stillman & Company and pull up the Pac-Man Jones podcast. We touched on everything from his relationship with the city of Nashville, with how he felt about the media, with what happened when he was younger and why it didn't work out here. And of course, the fact that Pac-Man always found himself in trouble, and the reason why he found himself in trouble probably wouldn't get him in as much trouble today. And that's because he visited too many strip clubs. Clearly, free country. You want to visit the strip club, visit the strip club. But Pac-Man decided to explain the strip club element just a little bit more. The little things that used to matter in, like, our society. I remember when Honey Badger was at LSU and he kept getting suspended for smoking weed. And it was like, bad guy for smoking weed.
And I was a bad guy because I went to the strip club.
That's exactly where I was going. You went to the strip club.
I love the strip clubs. And you got to realize, in Atlanta, the strip clubs is a regular club. We go to eat at the strip club. Y'all don't have that in Nashville.
Wasn't that Lou Williams?
Magic City?
The wings at Magic City, Lou Williams? Yeah.
Magic City have the best food. That you can go to a five-star restaurant here, you won't get the same meal that you can get in Magic. And that's what it is in Atlanta. You can go Onyx, have unbelievable food. Like, that is what Atlanta is known for. It's not going to the strip club to see some girls. You know what I mean? It's almost a regular party.
So you weren't going to the strip club to see some girls?
Yeah, that too. Hell yeah.
Pac-Man on our show earlier today. Go check out the podcast. Let me say this. I do think there's a chance that the food at... Now, Ian, you texted me and said strip club, and then somebody else here was talking about Pac-Man and strip clubs. I mean, I didn't pick up on that when he was talking. Is that like a Pac-Man thing, the whole idea of the strip club?
I don't know. Maybe that's just what they call them in Atlanta, the lingo that they use. I'm not sure.
Or just what he says about it.
Yeah. Not quite sure.
I mean,
I did pick up on that, though.
Pac-Man, I am going to venture to make an assumption. And that is that the food at the Atlanta strip clubs probably is really good. Like, I brought up that Lou Williams thing years ago. He left the bubble for like a funeral, and he had to quarantine more because he got the wings at the Magic City strip club. And they were like, oh no, those wings are like legendary. And, you know, an average Joe like me is like, dude, you're going to the strip club during COVID to get wings? Like, what is this? Like, do these strip clubs DoorDash? I don't know. But I do think that we need to try out the food at the strip clubs in Atlanta. I'm a little worried that a strip club in Atlanta would be a little too much for me. I think that that might be a little too out of my comfort zone, probably be the right way to say it. But it does sound like the food's good, and I am going to venture the to guess that the food at those places
I didn't really know that Atlanta was known for that kind of thing. You know, I didn't realize like they were world class renowned for their really good food at the Gentlemen's Clubs. I didn't really pick up on that. Not sure I'd heard that before.
He said it's better than a 5-star restaurant.
That's what he said. Yeah. So I hadn't heard that before, but I'll take his word for it. That's for sure.
Texter to the text line says the Pac-Man interview. Wow, what a classless and arrogant loser. Role model? ? He proceeded to curse on radio multiple times and talk about strip clubs. Laughable. Pac-Man needs to stay in Atlanta and keep his trash out of Nashville. I'm going to say this about Pac-Man. I didn't cover Pac-Man because I ran into Withrow here and we were just talking about Pac-Man and all that stuff and how I had Pac-Man coming up. And Withrow was like, yep, if we still had Paul on our show, there's no way we'd be having Pac-Man. And I saw Jim Wyatt and I was joking that I was going to have Pac-Man on, knowing that years ago, Jim Wyatt had to send his wife and kids to like their in-laws or something because of a threat-ish that was made by Pac-Man. And yet after interviewing Pac-Man, I mean, you'd be mad at him all you want. And obviously Pac-Man did to himself what he did. And that's why he wasn't a Titan. But I found Pac-Man to be a really jovial guy. I really liked Pac-Man. I mean, I thought, you know, with Pac-Man bringing him on in Nashville, asking him what would happen, the guy was worried Pac-Man was going to get mad or he was going to, you know, whatever. Honestly, that's probably one of the most fun interviews I've done in a long, long time. I mean, people were texting me, TD, you know, he loved the Pac-Man interview. And someone said, I am here for this Pac-Man interview. And I have a new appreciation for Pac-Man Jones. I guess that's what the Super Bowl will do to you. Now, I am going to be on television in Phoenix today in about 10 minutes, and I'm very, very excited about that. I don't know. I can't figure out how to DVR things here on my iPad, you know, to DVR me on the Phoenix news station, but I'm very excited about that. That's going to wrap up this day here at Radio Row. Tomorrow, we have a huge show planned for you for Super Bowl Friday. We have not really talked much about the game. We will do a lot of that. And, of course, we'll keep asking people what the Titans should do at quarterback and what they say and break it down like we always do. Stillman and Company right here, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.